Once the darling of literary and academic talk fests, Australia's former favourite feminist is now being shunned by Australian writers' festivals. Germaine Greer has once again offended and angered a range of sensibilities with her most recent book, On Rape. And that doesn't mean that folks aren't still clamouring to hear her speak. After the Brisbane Writers' Festival withdrew its invitation to have her discuss her book, a hastily arranged substitute event sold out. Germaine Greer, thanks for joining us on RN Drive.
Oh, look, my pleasure.
What is so problematic with the word rape?
Well, it's an ancient word. It means the abduction of women from the men who are in authority over them, their fathers, husbands, brothers, whatever. And it can mean also using them as concubines or prostitutes or marrying them or whatever, so that you still have a culture in some parts of the world where women who are abducted, their abductors can get off from any criminal consequence by marrying them, for example, which is still the case in some parts of India. And we don't really accept that idea that we are things to be stolen, but the way that the structure of our legal system works is you complain to the police, that means to the state, that means to the patriarchal authority. And then you discover that rather than taking an active part in a legal process, you are actually a piece of evidence. And the most important thing for the defence to do is to discredit you, which they put a lot of energy into doing.
So why do you think courts then should lower the penalties for rape?
Listen, I don't actually think that. This is not what was actually said in my essay. What I said was that if we are going to accept a lower burden of proof for a rape case, then we will have to lower the tariff. And that would cause an outcry, but it's still a suggestion that has to be made. The burden of proof is lower if you bring a private prosecution for damages. Then your assertion is much more likely to be believed than it is in a court of law. But if the penalty is going to be, say, 9 years, then there's no way they can accept a lower burden of proof.
So do you think that reducing penalties for rape would increase the number of convictions?
I'm not even interested principally in convictions because they are a tiny proportion of the actual incidents of rape and they're totally uncharacteristic. We found that men from racial minorities are much more likely to be convicted of rape than men from the main community. And that pattern is repeated again and again all over the world. There is a political aspect, there's a racial aspect to all of this. So we can't just suppose that what we want to do is put more men in jail. Why?
Well, I suppose the counter-argument is if they're perpetrators of this kind of violence, that they have to be consequences for that action?
Well, I think there's a very serious point here, and it's one that we're missing, generally speaking, which is that we are pretty aware that we've got repeat offenders. There are people out there who are rapists. Now, it's not true that I some feminists do believe this, but I certainly don't believe that all men are rapists. But there are people, we now discover from using the evidence from Callisto, a small proportion of men responsible for a high proportion of the rapes. And that means that you have a problem of predators in the community. Now, it's not a question necessarily of just banging them up. It's a question of preventing them from reoffending.
So you've argued that you know, marital rape or acquiescing when consent is not there over a long period of time is actually more traumatic than a violent rape that is perhaps one-off with a stranger. What's your evidence for saying or finding that it's more traumatic?
I didn't actually use the word traumatic. I think it's more damaging.
More damaging? Okay. I'll take that correction, but you've said it's more damaging. What's your evidence?
Because, look, if you get raped by a stranger, it's not something you need to internalise. You are just in the wrong place at the wrong time and you'll get over it. But if you are in a relationship that year on year on year, you have sex that you don't want, that you don't enjoy, that doesn't involve any expression of affection. And I've quoted some examples from women giving evidence online of just what they put up with on a daily basis. That is corrosive. That will destroy your self-confidence, your security, your approval of yourself. I mean, you're being treated like a spittoon.
But how do we know, though? How do we know? What's the evidence to say that?
Because women tell you. It's there.
But women who have gone through damaging, violent, one-off incidents of sexual assault also talk about the long-term impacts that's there.
Yes, I dare say. I've undergone a violent rape of that sort. And so a number of other women who have written about it at length and who made the point that what they needed to do was to get over it. And we all need to get over it. I'm shocked to discover that there are women who are raped in that fashion and then entertain thoughts of suicide. I mean, that's got to be dealt with. But is it caused by the act itself? Where does that come from? Why would you suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder?
Well, because you've gone through an incredibly violent incident.
It's not necessary.
And it stays with you.
No, look. If we look at statistics, we'll be told by the police that rapes seldom involve violent injury. Compared to being knifed, a rape is a non-event.
Let's just stay with that. A rape is a non-event. That's not the story that women who have gone through these kinds of rapes tell
some
us.
Some of them.
Well, of course, like anything, people have mixed reactions to all sorts of trauma.
Indeed, they do. But in most cases, we think that the thing to do is to get over it. Let's think about it in another way. I grew up in a Catholic school system where the great story was the story of Maria Goretti. And what you never did was talk about it in any but the way that said she was heroic in defending her virtue and that she ended up being killed and that her rapist was imprisoned and is now a monk and so on. And she was the great heroine. And it was understood that what she should do is defend herself at all costs. In order what? I mean, not even to avoid committing a sin. I mean, to have saved her own life wouldn't have been committing a sin at all. And this was the doctrine that we absorbed when we were little kids for years and years and years.
Why is it necessary, though, to weight one experience of rape to another? Why
no,
is that?
Not necessary. I'm not doing it.
Well, you have talked about one being more damaging than the other.
I think it's worthwhile considering whether, what the sentence actually reads is not that everyday domestic, you know, half-hearted rape is not an evil. It is. It degrades the relationship. And the relationship is what's important. That's a relationship you built your life on. That's the person you're having your children with who is treating you like a spittoon. And that is, I think, ultimately deeply damaging. And it's important that we take this on board. What's happening now is we're beginning to accept that non-consensual sex is rape. That's what it says in the Istanbul Convention, which you may not want to agree with, and there'll be plenty of people who don't want to agree with it, but if you do agree with it, you have to take it on board that this isn't something we can be blasé about. This is terrible. If marriages are based upon the oppression of one sex by another, the assertion of one set of sexual needs over another, then it's a lousy system.
You've been accused of trivialising the experience and impact of rape on women. Do you accept that some women have found it more traumatic than others?
Of course I do.
Well, the whole
Why
kind of
I?
Get over it, you know, move on.
Yes, but
the spirit of that implies a lack of empathy with that experience.
I haven't actually said get over it. I said that I thought it was necessary to get over it. I didn't want to spend the rest of my life being a rapee and having a rape narrative that I was prepared to make the story of my life. I think that would be a disaster. And I think if we have ways of stopping that happening, we should be activating them. But in fact, we don't give very much assistance to people who've been raped. And we give none at all to women who are enduring loveless and pleasureless sex in their lives.
Do you see parallels between your own experience with Australian writers festivals where, you know, we know what's happened with the Brisbane Writers Festival, for instance, where you were, you know, uninvited essentially, and the recent situation with Steve Bannon being disinvited from the New Yorker Festival?
I don't know very much about the Steve Bannon case, but disinviting is, I mean, the whole thing is silly. I mean, I'm perfectly happy to talk with people who disagree with me, because we won't clarify the issues until we've beaten them out and we don't all cover all the angles. I think to assume that there is a dogma that must be served in any meeting of minds is self-defeating, ultimately.
So in that sense, even someone like Steve Bannon should be invited to be challenged and asked questions at a festival?
The first question is, should he be invited? You've always got the option of not inviting him. But if you do invite him, it's a bit ridiculous to then disinvite him. Who's running the joint? This is what I don't get. I mean, who's making these bad decisions?
Well, we know what it is. Often it's a reaction to some public outcry or from a sentiment, a changing sentiment, which says we don't want to hear certain views.
Then
are you concerned
come.
About that?
That's easy. You can stay away. And people do stay away. I have no difficulty with my audiences. We're being threatened all the time, being closed down by LGBT activists and so on, but they never turn up. And so there's a myth around that I've been no platformed and so forth, and I'm being labelled a heretic and I'm being muzzled, and it's all nonsense.
You don't feel muzzled?
It hasn't happened. I speak every week. How much speaking have I got to do?
Well, you're speaking right now, that's right. So you're not being muzzled here. In fact, you've just been asked some questions. Jermaine Greer, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Patricia.
Jermaine Greer's On Rape, published by Melbourne University Press, is out now. And if you'd like to hear Jermaine speak, she's doing two events with the School of Life, one in Sydney on September the 5th and then in Melbourne on September the 6th. Her Brisbane event has sold out. And if this story raises any concerns for you, because, of course, we talked about some pretty difficult issues there, you can call Lifeline 131114 or the National Sexual Assault Support Line, Respect, on 1800 737 732. This is RN Drive.